from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Americans generate a lot of trash, an estimated 250 million tons a year. And we all know that landfills aren't exactly environmentally friendly, generating, among other things, greenhouse gases, basically the last thing the planet needs. But some cities, including San Francisco, are on their way to being zero-trash communities with aggressive recycling and composting programs. Do those goals really make sense, both economically and environmentally? And if so, how do we get there? In the hour ahead, trash talk, including answers to all those nitty-gritty questions about what you can recycle and compost and what you can't. All ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Here's one thing that probably isn't on your to-do list today. Generate more trash. And yet, according to the EPA, the average American contributes about 4.4 pounds of garbage to their neighborhood landfill each day. That's 29 pounds a week, 1,600 pounds a year. Now, to get from 4.4 pounds to zero will take some doing, but that's exactly what some cities are now trying to do, become zero-trash communities, including here in San Francisco. So in this hour forum, we're going to find out what it takes to get to that particular goal. But to get a sense of the nature of the trash problem, we want to start by exploring the confusion that exists about what you can recycle and what you can't. And so we're going to start with a case study, and that's at our very own workplace, KQED, and find out just how environmentally savvy those public media types really are. And joining us to get started is the most feared man at KQED. It's not our CEO, not our CFO or COO. It's Paul Toolman, a man whose job officially sounds so friendly, listener services, but who's really the enforcer. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Happy to have you join us. Why don't you get us started by, you've brought in that famous blue container. And this is what was in the blue container this morning. And as we look at it, tell me something that you found in it this morning or a few things that really shouldn't be there.
One of the first thing we have, since we do so much author interviews and forum, is a manila-type envelope with a plastic lining. Well, that's two different items. The envelope is fine, could be recycled, but the plastic lining can't be.
So that really should be in the black landfill
that
container.
That has to go into the landfill. It's
okay.
Unfortunate.
All right. What else is in your
then
little
we've
collection?
We've got a, what they call clamshell that you get your salad in or another meal, and that is plastic and is definitely recyclable in the bin.
So that's in the right place?
It's in the right place.
Okay, anything else wrong in there that you spotted this morning?
Well, I'll tell you what. Ziploc bag.
Uh-huh.
You were talking about the plastic is sort of the real issue. The bags, you just can't put in recycling. It messes up the machinery. And if it's put into compost, I've seen quotes saying it just totally ties up the machines they use to do the composting.
So
that
what are,
is trash.
So what are some of the big mistakes that people keep making again and again? Is plastic, are those the standard culprits that you find?
I think one of the easiest to look at is coffee cups. So you've got a, you know, paper cup from Starbucks or whoever you patronize.
I'm holding one as we speak.
The cup should definitely be compost because it's been exposed to food, the whole thing, but the plastic lid can't be. And people are really having trouble getting into their heads, I got to separate the two, paper over there and the plastic over here.
So just to be clear about that, the cup that I'm holding and the little cardboard around it can go into compost.
Yes.
Plastic lid into recycling.
Yes.
Neither of them go into the black container.
Well, that's the ideal situation. I hate to say it, but quite often that's where it ends up.
Well, and to give you some idea of how poorly KQED sometimes performs, Paul frequently sends out little memos and reminders. Here's a memo from Paul. Someone is not getting the point. Paul writes, a clear plastic container tossed into the black landfill container. Why? This item is recyclable. Take 10 seconds and put it in the blue bin. Memo from Paul. Someone is unclear on the concept. Today, one of our colleagues tossed the plastic package, a compostable dish, and a Ziploc bag into the blue recycling bin. But the plastic bag has to go in the black landfill bin. Pay attention. So forth and so on. Paul, stay with us. We want to introduce the rest of our guests, and we'll talk about the nature of the problem and how we can actually get to zero trash communities. Joining us as well, Jared Blumenfeld. He is the regional administrator for the U.S. EPA, the Pacific Southwest region, which includes California, Nevada, Arizona, and Hawaii. He ran the Department of Environment before that for the city of San Francisco. Jared Blumenfeld, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Happy to have you join us. Joining us as well from our Sacramento studio, Mark Murray. He's the executive director of Californians Against Waste. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jay Ramos joins us as well. He is the district manager for waste management in Monterey County. He runs the recycling division there. That division also, they also handle recycling efforts throughout Alameda County, including the city of Oakland. Thanks very much for joining us as well, Jay Ramos.
Thank you.
So let's get started with the nature of the problem and how we get from that 4.4 pounds of trash a day, Jared Blumenfeld, to zero. See the problem here at KQED in part. Is that typical of the kinds of things where people need to be educated that you think has to happen if we can get to that zero trash goal?
Not everyone's as lucky as you guys. You got Paul, the enforcer at the front desk. But it is symbolic of the nature of the problem. I would frame the problem slightly differently, which is we're not trying to get to a place where we have each person producing zero amount of material. We just want to make sure that all that material is either recycled or composted. So it's not getting to a place where we have no bins. It's getting to a place where everything goes somewhere other than landfill.
So is it possible, so when we think about zero trash, is it really a better way to think of it is let's recycle and compost everything we can? Because there's always going to be some trash, is that right?
It's really a design issue. If you can make a product that can be recycled or composted, then ultimately everything can be recycled and composted. So it's more a philosophical shift in the way we think about resources. For the last 100-150 years, we may have thought of waste. Many of those resources have a lot of energy embedded in them, a lot of natural resources, metals, minerals, plastic. And the real goal is to turn those back into new products because it's very expensive and environmentally damaging to extract those resources in the first place. So it's about saving money. Many businesses and universities have adopted zero waste for the sole reason of saving their bottom line. And as you started out, really no one wants to waste anything from money to time. We really need to get to zero waste because getting to 95%, then the question would be, do we really need to waste this last 5%?
And give us some sense of why it's important. I mean, to ask the sort of obvious question. I mean, is this really so crucial? If we're all, everyone's concerned, everyone sort of bows and nods and pays homage to the goal of being environmentally correct. But how crucial is this?
It's crucial from a number of respects. The first one really is those economic savings. It doesn't make a lot of sense to put natural resources in a hole in the ground when they can be reused. And companies from DuPont to Frito-Lay are saying in their process chain, in their factory, we don't want any waste because that waste equates to money going down the drain. The second are the environmental impacts of that, greenhouse gases that can be reduced. The amount that America is already recycling today, which is about 34%, is the equivalent of taking 33 million cars off the road annually. So there's a huge...
Say that again.
So we have about 250 million tons that we generate. Of that, about 34% is recycled or composted. If you look at that from the energy impacts, that's the equivalent of taking about 33 million cars off the road annually. So there's a lot of energy in all the stuff that goes in the blue and green and, unfortunately, in the black car.
And again, I'm not sure it's commonly understood how much methane, how much greenhouse gas is generated by landfills.
So when you look at what's still going into landfill, which is something we can talk about, the majority of that is food and yard trimmings and paper. And that's all organic material that produces methane. Methane is about 25 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2. And although there's liners on the bottom of landfills so that the material doesn't go into groundwater, there isn't a liner on the top. There is cover, but most of the methane ends up, unless it's captured, it goes into the atmosphere, and that's a potent greenhouse gas. So of the list of things that we can all do in our daily lives to improve the planet, recycling and composting is one of the easiest and the most impactful. And then the final aspect is the jobs. At this time when our country needs as many jobs as possible.
Yeah, dismal jobs report this morning.
Yeah, getting a recent report by the AFL-CIO and environmental groups last year showed that you could add 1 million-plus jobs if the country set a goal of getting to just 75% reduction in waste by 2030, more than 1 million jobs.
Jared Blumenfeld, the regional administrator for the EPA. Mark Murray in Sacramento this morning, executive director of Californians Against Waste. Where are you generating most of your efforts these days? What's the priority for you as far as getting more communities to this zero waste, zero trash goal?
Well, I think Jared touched on it. There's two areas that we're focusing on right now. And maybe Paul can appreciate this a little bit. There are problem materials that don't make it into the composting bin. They don't make it into the recycling bin because they're just not recyclable or compostable. And so we are working on a spectrum of policies that are requiring the producers and consumers to take responsibility for that packaging, those problem products, mattresses, electronics, fast food packaging, various plastic wraps and bags, and requiring those manufacturers to take responsibility for achieving waste reduction and recycling targets. And if they can't do that, then those products need to be phased out of the marketplace. The other thing we're focused on, though, is the organics, is the green waste and the food waste. And I do want to say that Californians have done a fabulous job of responding to this initiative for increased recycling. California households have reduced the amount of trash that they're throwing away from more than 50 pounds per household per week to less than 23 pounds per household per week. But as Jared noted, a lot of what's still getting thrown away at California households is the food waste, is some of that green waste. Most every community has some kind of green waste collection program, but only a few communities like San Francisco and Oakland are actually now adding food waste to those programs. So we've got to expand those programs statewide. We've got to come up with additional tools, not just composting, but also anaerobic digestion to process that material and then to add it back to the economy to return that organic fraction to California agriculture.
Well, let's hear about what some of the challenges are then at the recycling center level. Jay Ramos, again, runs that operation in Monterey County. Before that was in Alameda County. Mr. Ramos, what do you see? What's the biggest headache for you in terms of what winds up being where you are that ought to be somewhere else? And what are some of those sorting problems that you have to contend with?
Well, I think if you look at the evolution of our San Leandro location, I mean, it's a highly complex system. I mean, we handle about 350,000 or 350 tons of recyclables a day through that plant. We do about 150,000 tons of organic material a year. That place, 76,000 of that comes from residential and food waste programs, and the other 12,000 of commercial organics. We have a construction demolition facility there. We have a public area drop-off center that does about 34,000 tons of self-haul material. So when you're cleaning out your garage or you're doing some light-duty construction at home, you bring it there, and then we separate it all.
So are you increasingly able to really handle anything? If I want to, you know, get rid of my old golf clubs or an old appliance or something that I might not typically think, are we getting to the point where you can sort of deal with anything?
Well, you know, and I guess it goes back to, you know, the 3 R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle, you know, and that's been our strategies. What do we do with this stuff? You know, what do I do with those old golf clubs? I mean, down here in Monterey, we have at the landfill, there's a buyback center where you can drop off those golf clubs. We have household hazardous waste drop-off centers. So, yes, you're right. You know, the landfills, the transfer stations are evolving. You need to give the community solutions for this material.
We want to open up our conversation to all of you this morning as well so that we can answer all those pesky questions about what's recyclable and what isn't. What goes in the blue bin versus what goes in the green bin and the black bin. So you can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org or post your questions on our Facebook page or on our website. If you have a pet peeve at your workplace or in your home that you want to make sure someone listens to this morning, join us now at 866-733-6786. We'll try to answer all your questions between everyone here. I'm sure that we'll be able to do that. Jared Blumenfeld, where are we in this evolution? San Francisco is now close to 80%. Is that a huge anomaly, or are many cities getting to the point of approaching that sort of percentage when it comes to what they're actually recycling?
Unfortunately, nationally, it's a huge anomaly because of the work of Mark Murray and Californians Against Waste and many others. California cities from San Jose to San Diego, Los Angeles, Sacramento are all hovering around the 70%. Fresno would be included in that. So many cities in California have got there. And the reason for that was back in 1989, people thought there was a landfill crisis. We were going to run out of space. And the state set a mandate of getting to 50% recycling by the year 2000. And if you didn't do that, there was a threat of a $10,000 a day fine. The state has now set a goal of getting to 75%. And Carol Mortensen, who's the head of Cal Recycle, says the only way they're going to get there is by increasing the amount of food waste, as Mark discussed, that's either going into anaerobic digestion or turning into compost.
And are we... Is it really worth the effort, I guess, is the economic question I want to ask. I mean, when you think about all that's going into this, all the ordinances and laws that are passed, the amount of bureaucratic energy that goes into this, the trucks that have to be out on the road, there's a lot of money spent. So it's not just whether or not you can convert a recycled can to more aluminum, and that makes sense. There's a bigger economic question, I guess. So can you make the argument that it really is sound, both economically and environmentally, to put all of that energy into this effort?
Yes.
Then make it.
Ultimately, I was looking at the region that we have includes Nevada, and I was looking at how much, for instance, waste does it take to generate 1 ounce of gold? It takes 30 tons. So in Nevada, you've got mining 30 tons to create 1 ounce. That goes into a cell phone, for instance. If you just throw that cell phone into a hole in the ground, you are losing all that energy, all the potential. If you recycle, as now we require in California, all electronic waste, that gold, all those semiconductors are being recycled. The economics is key here, Dave. You've really hit on the most important thing. It has to make economic sense to get to zero waste. If the economic factors favor putting something in a hole in the ground into landfill, this will never work. And so the reason it works in San Francisco, a company, a restaurant like Skoma's or Anchor Steam, it's cheaper for them to recycle and compost than it is to send it to landfill. And that's why the system works in San Francisco.
Let's hear what our listeners want to know about this topic. Lisa joins us first this morning from Redwood City. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi. I wondered if you can, if you're needing to rinse out the plastic containers from restaurants. I know the ones that are compostable, you don't have to, but what about the plastic ones?
Paul, you want to answer that question?
Quite honestly, I have addressed this question to the recycling people here in San Francisco, and I hate to admit this, but I've gotten different answers.
Aha. Uh-huh. All right.
Some say, rinse it out so it's clean. Others say, well, a little food stain or something left over is not bad. Just don't throw half a salad in.
All right, Jay Ramos, what would your answer be? How clean do you have to be?
Well, you know, the plant appreciates it. It keeps our plants clean, keeps the odor down at our plant. So we're happy to have that. I personally wash mine because I like to keep my cart clean also. But if you look at it from the other side of how much water it takes to clean those out. So I think that's where the you have to decide. For me, I like a clean can at my home, and then it also keeps my plants clean.
But the answer to Lisa in the end, though, Jared Blumenfeld, is you don't have to be super fussy about this, and it's better to recycle a slightly dirty plastic container than to just think, oh, I don't have time to do this, I'll throw it away?
Yeah, the reason that California programs work and Paul is able to send out those emails is because the system's convenient and easy to understand. Yeah. The problem with Chicago and New York, who have about a 15% recycling rate, is it's still very, very, very confusing. So, you know, it's much better, as Jay just said, if you're going to not recycle it because you've got to wash it out, then just throw it in.
And recycle.
Right.
Yeah. So rinse lightly and recycle. Lisa, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Stacy, who has our next question. Stacy, go ahead.
Hi. I was just having this exact discussion last night with someone. I have two questions. One is it possible to recycle things like when you open a yogurt container, for example, and you take the top off and then there's an additional plastic sort of piece of plastic that you have to peel off the top of the yogurt, for example, before you can eat it. I'm wondering if that's recyclable. Second question is, what happens if you put something in a recycling bin that is not supposed to be there?
Uh-huh.
Does that sort of contaminate everything else, or are people removing those things?
Okay, great questions, Stacy. Stay with us. We'll see if we can get answers. Mark Murray, can you take one of those, please?
Sure. And I'll say that, you know, generally those multi-layer materials, the film on the top of the yogurt container, those aren't recyclable. Mostly they're polyethylene or multiple different kinds of plastics, and that's a contaminant. And sadly, somebody at Jay's operation is having to separate that material out. It's a contaminant that adds to the cost of the system. And I also might add that, you know, different kinds of materials, different kinds of recyclables have different costs of recycling. And so, you know, some material has a real high value. We know aluminum and paper, but plastics generally have a higher cost of recycling. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, even if something is technically recyclable, sometimes we still want to focus on reducing that material. And but in terms of the specific question, generally, those films, not recyclable and a contaminant, and somebody's going to have to pull that out.
And what are the consequences of, as Stacy suggests, of getting it wrong, other than getting a memo from you, Paul Toulmin? I mean, what are the consequences? Is this a big problem that people get it wrong, and then that adds to all the sorting costs, Jared?
It actually is a big issue, and the contract that the city has with Recology, the city of San Francisco and other cities, limits the amount of poorly recycled material. So if it can't be recycled, that penalizes the company because we want to make sure the recycling rate is as high as possible. And so if people are doing the wrong thing, that turns into a problem.
So every workplace needs a Paul Toulmin to help to keep us on the job, right? Paul, go ahead.
I think one other thing we should mention as far as waste, Jared brought it up. If you throw that half full Coca-Cola can. Coke, that can's recyclable. But you throw it into the blue bin, particularly here in San Francisco, there could be a gigantic pile of white paper that somebody else has put in the bin. Your Coca-Cola goes all over that white paper. It becomes trash.
Jared, quick point, and then we're going to a break.
Yeah. Paul's point is a great one, and it actually, the number one thing being exported from the West Coast of the United States is pulp paper.
We'll come back and answer more of your questions. Our phone lines are full, but please keep trying to get in. We'll take as many as we can over the next half hour. 866-733-6786 is our number, 866-733-6786. You can post your questions, too, on our Facebook page or on our website. Email them at forum@kqed.org, and we'll answer all of them when we return. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum, our topic this morning, how we can become more adept at recycling and composting so that we generate much less trash. A number of cities around the Bay Area, including San Francisco, have established zero trash goals, in San Francisco's case, by the year 2020. We're talking about how to do that, what the obstacles are, and what we can each figure out in order to get closer to that goal. 866-733-6786 is our number. You can post your questions or thoughts on our Facebook page or website as well. And a number of questions coming in. And first, I should confess, this is another environment environmental goof on our part, right? I've got all these emails in front of me. We've printed here a dozen different. What should we be doing instead, Paul Tuhlman, instead of printing all of these?
What really should be doing is recycling the paper in that, take the other side, which has already been printed on, and run the clean side through your printer so you get double use out of the same sheet of paper.
You're going to have to do some enforcing around forum, I think. Here's a question from Boris, who writes in, I stand confounded in front of three different labeled bins. Is it worse to throw something out that's recyclable or worse to throw something that's not recyclable in the recycling bin? People are really concerned about this whole question of getting things right or wrong, Jay Ramos. Can you help us understand the consequences of that problem? What it means to you when you get things, when people put things in the wrong bin, how much does that hurt you economically? How much does that detract from the overall goal?
Well, what I tell people is when in doubt, recycle. Because once you put it in the garbage bin, it's gone. There's no one at the landfill that's going to pull that out. So if you put it in some type of recycle bin, when it gets to the facility, we'll determine whether we have a program to do something with that material. And if we don't, then we'll send it to landfill. So we're kind of like, you know, a screening.
And how big a problem is that, the problem that Paul was alluding to before the break about, you know, you put in a can of Coke that still has Coke in it, it spills on the paper. What does that create? What kind of problems does that create for you? Or how does that detract from what you're able to net from this economically?
Well, he is correct, though. It does. It does downgrade the paper. No one, you know, I can't sell paper that has, you know, that's wet or has, you know, Coke on it. So it does. It does downgrade it. So you really do need to think about it when you throw that can away of what is going to, ramifications are going to be at the plant.
Amy asks, batteries. I've heard they can go in the trash now. Is that true?
No.
No, Jared?
No, no, no.
No, 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 no is the answer.
You could do. No. We have programs where we ask our community to put them in plastic bags and tape them to the top of their recycle can. And when the truck comes by to collect your recyclables, he takes that plastic bag and puts it in a special compartment on the truck. And then when it comes here to the recycle plant, we recycle those correctly.
And Mark Murray, this is, seems to me something really useful that workplaces can do. It is something here at KQED. There's a battery drop-off a spot. Is that something that you're also trying to encourage? Because people are confounded by what to do with batteries.
Absolutely. But more than just encouraging it, we are attempting to require it in terms of because the situation that Jay described in terms of taping them to the recycling container, that's a very unique situation, and that isn't available to most people in California, and yet batteries can't go in landfills anywhere in California. So we do have a requirement for retailers to take back rechargeable batteries. So any store that sells rechargeable batteries is currently required to take them back. We're trying to add to that policy and require that any battery that a retailer sells, there's got to be a place for taking it back. But certainly many public offices, I know our library in our town has a place where you can drop off your batteries. So try and find out where are the drop-off places for batteries in your community.
Julie is next. Julie, go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm calling about Paul's comment on not pitching your Ziploc bags into recycling and rather put them in trash. And I've tried the Glad-type Tupperware things, but they really make you run your dishwasher an extra time a week if you're regularly using those. I was wondering if Paul is aware or could give us tips on the state of perhaps companies producing compostable sandwich bags and zip-type bags that would be compostable, similar to the ones that you can line your compost container with.
Great question. Anyone on that? And there are also, I've heard some people say, you know, when you're handed something that said this is compostable cutlery, that it may not in fact be. So what do we know about what's compostable? Jared?
So one of the first rules I would say is that durable products, when you go back to the beginning, which is the design, you want to buy things that last a long time. And from a life cycle perspective, it is better to get that Tupperware than it is either compostable or plastic. They both take up resources. They're both single use. So moving away from things that you use once, whether you can put them in the green bin, the black bin, or it really doesn't matter. You want to get something that you can use over and over again.
So the better thing I could have done this morning, rather than get my coffee cup at Starbucks and this paper cup, which I will dutifully recycle, would have been to just bring in my own
Absolutely.
Coffee container. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Julie, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to We'll go to Van in Livermore. Van, go ahead, please.
Hi. The question I have is about thermal conversion technology and why that kind of technology isn't promoted as opposed to being resisted at the state and federal level for converting, you know, plastics, paper, any organic material into biofuels and alternative fuels and energy.
Okay, Van, thank you. Mark, can you take that?
Sure. Those technologies are just too expensive and destroy more energy than they gain from recovery. Now, there are technologies, as we talked about, like anaerobic digestion, where you are focusing on narrower streams like that organic stream, and you're adding microbes to that organic fraction, and you are realizing some energy as well as a compostable digestate. So there are new technologies that are kind of slow cooking the organic fraction and getting energy and getting compost. But, you know, some of these technologies that are basically burning the garbage cost us more in terms of energy than we actually get out of them.
Van, thanks for the question and the call. I'm going to try to out Paul Toulmin right now, actually, because you've got a plastic water bottle in front of you. Now, what's with that?
I am sort of breaking the rules.
All right. I just wanted to see
if
I could do that.
I have a ceramic coffee cup at my desk, which I could have brought in, but this is smaller and more convenient, and that's an excuse many people use. Well, it's just easier.
How big a problem is our plastic bottles? And there's people, I don't know how big a thing that is. And should we avoid buying bottled water and all of that? Jared?
First of all, back in 1974, Congress created something called the Safe Drinking Water Act. So when you turn that tap on, EPA and others have spent billions of dollars making sure that it's clean and safe to drink. When you get it from a bottle like that, the standards are actually less good. It's significantly more expensive, and the quality is in some cases, much less good. In terms of the plastic itself, about a billion plastic water bottles in California end up in landfill each year. So it's not the way to go. There is an innovation, and people on the line may be interested. There's a new program in Riverside, California, where they take 2 billion of these plastic water bottles and turn them into 2 billion new plastic water bottles. So the technology to recycle is getting better, but it's always going to be better for Paul to bring in his ceramic.
It's probably the bravest thing I've ever done is challenge Paul to.
Yeah, you will regret that.
I know. I can't wait to see the next memo I get.
Yeah, I really doubt that.
Susan in Sacramento has our next question. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to remind you that there is an older recycling center, and they exist in every community across the country, and it has got a two-way door, and that's the thrift shops, the Goodwills, and the Salvation Armies. They take in golf clubs, appliances, all those things, and you can also go back in the other door and buy your pots and pans, dishes, glasses, clothes. You can buy a lot of things used, and then you don't get all of that packaging that you then have to turn around and figure out how to recycle.
Fabulous point, Susan. Thank you. Thanks for reminding us of that, because that's part of the problem you have to contend with, right, Jay Ramos, that people put in, you know, clothes or you know, use this or use that of things that can't really be dealt with very readily by an operation like yours.
Correct. You have to. We partner with Hope Services on the clothing. So when we see it come through our waste stream here, we collect it for them, and then they come and pick it up, and then they put it to you. So, it's all about the reuse part of it. You just need to really think about, when you have that defining moment when you're at the trash or recycle container, what can I do with this stuff? Can I drop it off on the way to work at the Goodwill or Hope Services or places like that? You just need to rewire your brain and the way you think.
Susan, thanks so much for bringing that point to us. It's also a reminder, and you hinted at this earlier, Jared Blumenfeld, that we have to sort of rethink the things at the very beginning of this chain of events and rethink about what we buy and how we buy so that we sort of stop the problem before it starts. What sort of things should people think about when they go to buy really any product? Is there a sort of checklist that you ought to be thinking about?
So if you look at what's going to landfill today, we could get to 90% as a country easily. The remaining 10%, you really need a reformulation of the products And the biggest issue is amalgamated products. One of the callers referenced this with the yogurt container. Those things that are currently hard to recycle. So the simpler the product is and the more it's made of just one thing, the easier it is to, that it will be recycled in the end. The more different components, it's very difficult for Jay to take those to bits, and it's expensive to do that. So the simpler the product is, and the more, one of the things we haven't talked about is we do a great job in this country, and we're doing an even better job in a place like California of recycling. What we do a very poor job of is buying things with recycled content. Mm-hmm. So when we're looking to buy things, whether it's paper or any product, one of the things we should be looking for is what is the recycled content of the plastic? What is the recycled content of the paper? The more we buy that, the more we encourage domestic markets and jobs for the recycled product that we're putting in.
Let's see if we can shoot through a number of very specific questions that are coming through. Lucy writes, what about the bags that frozen vegetables come in, or chips, those kinds of bags? What can we do with the bag that bread comes in? Any of that, Paul? Where should that go, those sorts of bags?
Well, if you look at the definition, even the one I have here on a brochure from Recology, potato chip bags, clear plastic bags, not clear plastic clamshell containers that are hard. They just cannot go into either the recycling or the compost stream at this point. It's hard to tell what's going to happen in the future.
Jan writes, tenants come and go in my apartment. Many are young and from other cities, or recycling may not even be part of their vocabulary. Our management doesn't make a concerted effort to help educate people to learn what they need to learn. Is that, Mark Murray, an effort on, that you're trying to initiate as well in terms of educating people? Paul Toulmin was making the comment to me earlier this morning that people come to KQED from lots of different communities that all have different rules. So is there an education component that has to take place?
There is. And I think that, you know, part of that is the legislation that Jared referred to in terms of California now has in place a 75% waste reduction and recycling goal. It has a requirement that all commercial enterprises and all multifamily dwellings have recycling opportunities. And part of that is there has to be an education program with that. For the most part, those education programs are community specific because sometimes the rules are different. San Francisco has a very aggressive recycling program and a broad array of material that's accepted. It's not the same in Southern California and in the Central Valley. So the education programs that are most effective are those that are locally based, that your waste hauler or your local government is providing you. And I know that San Francisco's Department of the Environment has excellent education materials for multifamily managers and residents in terms of what they can and can't put in their bins.
A couple of people are wanting to raise variations on a question about how there is a conflict sometimes between buying something organic versus the kind of packaging that goes around it. Alan writes, I'm constantly appalled at the amount of packaging that goes into our organic and health foods. Why should anyone buy an organic tomato that comes in a plastic box? And Paul tweets, recycling is being co-opted by plastic bags, styrofoam, and various other greenwash products. Recycling doesn't necessarily make it green. So how do you sort that out, Jared?
I agree. I mean, I'm always offended when you're getting something that claims to be organic fruit and it's covered in more and more plastic. So as consumers, we have a great ability to shift the marketplace, both in terms of what Mark was saying. If people in their city want to have better recycling programs, they can go to their city council and demand it. You don't need to go to Sacramento. You don't need to go to Washington. You can just say, I want it. And the same is true if you're going to Whole Foods or Safeway and buying something. Just don't buy the thing that's covered in plastic.
It's the classic act local kind
right?
of action. Yeah. Tom wants to get into sort of that same arena and into the politics of all of this. Tom, go ahead.
Great. Thanks. My question is centered around the political forces behind both passing legislation like we have in California and San Francisco, and also the political forces that are stopping such progressive waste reduction laws from being passed around the rest of the country. I'd like to know who's standing in the way of
of waste reduction efforts across the U.S.?
Jared Blumenfeld.
It's a great question. I think the model is changing and people are realizing that zero waste, when you have the DuPonts and General Motors of the world and Chevron saying we need to move to zero waste, you know that you've turned the tide. There still is a lot of vested interests and the economics are still slanted towards putting things in a hole in the ground, namely landfill. So garbage companies generally get paid more the more they send to landfill. And so those economic incentives need to be reversed in order to make sure that zero waste is successful.
Kenneth wants to raise a related question about the question of sort of waste companies and their role in all of this. Kenneth, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that, you know, we haven't really heard a lot that really these companies and the laws that have been really created really have created a monopoly of very few companies that are making lots of money and dominated. And really even for a consumer to recycle, say, a computer, we can't recycle and get anything back from the fees we've paid. All the companies are milking that and getting everything from it. It's a monopoly.
Kenneth, thanks. Jay Ramos, you want to respond?
Well, you know, as we move towards zero waste, zero waste is really advanced recycling, and it requires technology. It requires to think outside the box. I look at our recycling facilities, you know, 5-10 years ago, they don't even resemble. They don't even look the same anymore. You know, we've got high-speed cameras. We've got optical sorters. We've got shaker tables. We've got vacuums. So these plants are expensive. You know, anaerobic digestion is expensive. So we do. We need a lot of those funds to help fund our efforts and provide solutions to get us there.
How much should we be concerned, Jerry Blumenfeld, about the sort of darker side of recycling, if I can frame it that way, the worry about whether or not there are monopolies, as Kenneth has raised? But also, Chuck Nevius had a column in the Chronicle the other day about homeless people who take bottles and stuff out of blue bins and then take them to independent salvagers who wind up actually getting a lot more money than the homeless people who are scavenging those. How much of a concern is all of that to you?
It's hard to quantify the problem or exactly specify what it is. I mean, ultimately, it's a good thing to have a redemption value on bottles and cans in California. And the states that have bottle bills, namely you get money that you paid to begin with back, it's a great thing. It incentivizes recycling. I would prefer the people taking bottles and cans and making a small living from that than breaking into my car. And so to the extent that this is a legitimate economic source for people that need it and they work, I've been out on the streets with them. They're often legitimate. They're often older people that are supporting families. And to me, it ends up being recycled. It may take a little bit of money away from the garbage companies, but these people are not making money.
To another question from Malcolm, who writes in, I've had occasion to see the incredible amount of plastic and other material waste generated by hospitals and doctors' offices, and no one ever talks about that. Is that a big issue, Jay Ramos? Do you get a lot from the healthcare industry that isn't either separated correctly or generates a lot of waste?
Well, there are companies that are set up just to handle hospitals. So, yeah, because it is a unique type of waste, and it needs to be handled differently. So, yeah, we see you're not supposed to throw medical waste in your residential commercial stuff, but hospitals are a whole other breed, and there are companies that are just focused nothing, just focus on that particular industry.
A couple more questions here we should try to get through in our remaining time. Kitty litter, what do you do with it? What's the right thing to do? Paul Tillman, do you know?
That is well, there's a thought. It is clay. Clay could be part of the composting cycle, and the cat refuse or whatever it's in it, that'll also compost.
Yeah. Does the panel agree? Is kitty litter a compostable matter? Anyone?
Organic.
You know, I would just make the point that if you have a commercial collection program commercial composting, the kitty litter can be composted in that system, but I wouldn't want anyone to be trying to compost their kitty litter in their own home composting, because you just don't get to high enough temperatures there to kill any pathogens, and I'm not sure I want you then to put that kitty litter compost in your garden.
Okay, so it may be compostable, but take it to the right place, not do it at home. Great, thank you.
Do it in the backyard.
Anne Claire writes, Marin is unlike San Francisco. There's no composting program, so I end up throwing away a lot of food waste, and I'd like to do something more productive with it. Where might I find out about a place that accepts composting? I'd be willing to take it somewhere if the location were at least somewhat close. Any answers for Anne Claire? Anyone?
Cal Recycles has a great website with lots of different resources on it. I would get Claire to go to the Marin, either her city or the board of supervisors, and say, you know what, we want a composting program in Marin.
So again, back to acting locally and,
yep.
and taking it on right there. Julian in Marin, we'll stay in Marin for a moment, has our next question. Julian, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about, I used to live in San Francisco, and, you throw everything into one bin when it comes to recycling. And here in Marin, there's glass and plastic and aluminum is sort of separated from the paper. And I heard, when these things go back to buyback, when the recycling companies sell these things back, the amount of, waste that's sort of compiled from just throwing everything together into one bin. It's about, I heard it's something like 50%.
Yeah, Julian, thanks for the question. So this is another one of these sort of where is the greater good come from? Is it worth it to separate out that paper?
Yeah, because I remember the earlier question was like, what do you do with a half can of Coke,
right.
if you throw it in there?
Well, let's see if we can get some answers. Stay with us, Julian. Anyone on that point? Mark, you want to take that?
Sure. Well, certainly the separating the containers from the fiber is going to preserve the quality of both of those streams, but that is going to be a more expensive system and in some regards a more complicated system. When you do in a single stream recycling system like you have in San Francisco, like we have in Sacramento, there is some amount of the paper, some amount of the glass gets degraded and is residual that and doesn't get recycled. But generally, those systems have proven to be pretty cost effective. The residual rates are closer to the 10, maybe 13% range in most effectively run programs. So it's nowhere close to 50%. It is more efficient to take that glass to a buyback or a drop-off recycling system because glass does wreak havoc on the recycling trucks, on the material recovery facility, because that broken glass tends to abrase the equipment over time.
Here's a question that I've heard come up a lot. What about milk cartons? And then Mike writes along with that, what about those almond soy milk containers, the rectangle box, the Tetra Paks? What about those? Where do those belong? Paul, can you tell us?
Well, I'm looking at Recology's guide brochure, and it is correct that the multi-layered soup containers, because it has kind of aluminum lining and an outside what looks like paper, has to go into the trash bin because it's multiple items.
That's here in San Francisco. Is that true generally, Jared Blumenfeld, that those multi-coated, like a plastic-coated milk carton that you get, a half gallon of milk, that has to go into trash?
Well, there's two different things that we're talking about. So
yeah.
Paul was talking about the Tetra Pak,
right.
Which you get the soy and rice milk and those kind of things in. Those have to go in the black cart. I think nationally they're looking at developing recycling centers, but I'm not sure that any of those are up and running. In terms of the wax paper milk carton that you get from Clover, that can go right in the green cart.
Okay, so it can be composted as opposed
to
recycled.
Right, exactly.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Here's a question from Lindsay. The small stickers on produce, such as avocados and tangerines, what about those? Do we compost the stickers?
I have no idea. They're really annoying. I wish they'd just take the stickers off.
I agree. Mark Murray, can you tell us?
As it ends up, apparently, according to the Food and Drug Administration, those little stickers actually have to be edible. So they're compostable because
Fabulous.
Anything you put on the food. So that was something I learned recently. I'm not sure I would encourage eating it, but those stickers technically could be composted.
Andrew writes in that he has scolded his coworkers for not recycling, but they claim it doesn't make any difference. So what can I do to change their minds? Clearly a question for you, Paul. What's your secret to getting people to pay attention?
Well, I've noticed one thing, that a visual approach to this, not just brochures, but actually creating a sign that's got the coffee cup lid and the straw and just a little nut in this bin. It can be effective, but if you overdo it, some people resist by doing exactly what the sign says not to do.
So visual cues and terrorize your
colleagues.
No,
not terrorize. Help them understand.
All right, we just have a moment left. Let's get each of you to say your wish list, what you wish people would be better at doing and why that would make a difference. Jay Ramos.
Well, I guess for me, it would be, you know, the advanced recycling. It's about rewiring our brains and really looking at the foundation for recycling, you know, reducing what you use. If you have another source, reusing it, using the Goodwills, the buyback centers. Think about what you're doing before you throw
it
away.
Right. Great point. Rewiring. Just real briefly, Mark Murray.
You know, I just want to say that I want everyone to realize this has been a tremendous success over the last 20 years in terms of cutting waste in half. And I just think the public's done a fantastic job. And it's our challenge now to create more opportunities for more recycling and more composting.
Jared Blumenfeld.
Other than cloning Paul, I would emphasize the real environmental benefits, economic benefits, and the ease with which this can be done.
Yeah. Paul Tillman, the last word is yours.
I think the basic thing, pay attention to what you're doing. Don't just walk up to the nearest bin and toss it in. Look at the bin. What color is it? What does it say? Then pay attention and toss in the right place.
Paul Tillman, thanks, and thanks for all that you do here at KQED. Thanks, too, to Jared Blumenfeld, Mark Murray, and Jay Ramos for participating in our program. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, Danny Bringer, our engineer, Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.